I strangled my glass.
Quite well.
Javier's eyes gleamed like he could reach inside me and pick out every filthy, inappropriate thought. He leaned against the wall, seemingly unaware of the havoc he'd just wreaked.
Since we're still on break, let's try something else. Truth or dare, you choose.
Truth or dare? What are we, 12?
It's a timeless game.
He arched one brow.
Unless you're scared.
Fuck it. Playing this stupid game was better than humiliating myself dancing again. Truth.
If you could be anything other than a publicist, what would you be?
I blinked. It wasn't a question I'd expected, nor was it one I'd given much thought to before. Nothing. I love my job. And I did. Despite the frustrations, the breakneck pace, and the clients who made me want to tear my hair out sometimes, I thrived under pressure. There was no downtime for reflection. There were only problems I could solve and solutions I could implement. People could call me a bitch or an ice queen, but there was one unshakable, undeniable truth. I was the best at what I did, point blank. That was why CEOs, celebrities, and socialites paid me the big bucks. They didn't all like me personally, but they respected me and they needed me. So you like to be needed. Javier's observation floated to the surface before I brushed it aside. So what? Everyone liked to be needed. Those who said they didn't were lying.
Nothing. There's not a single career you would consider outside PR?
He looked unconvinced.
I call bullshit.
Maybe I'd be a surgeon, I allowed. It was another high-pressure, fast-paced career. I had steady hands and I wasn't squeamish about blood. Commanding an operating room and saving lives could be exciting. Javier's mouth quirked.
Unsurprising.
I'll take that as a compliment. I finished my drink. Your turn. Truth or dare?
Truth.
Interesting. I would have pegged him as a dare guy. Similar question, I said. If you had to choose an actual career, what would you choose? I was genuinely curious. Javier had never expressed an ambition for any type of job. What made someone like him tick? He languished in the shadow of the villa, untouched by the moon or terrace lights, but his eyes sparked at my question.
One I'm good at,
he said. Like? A cloud passed over his expression before his smile reappeared.
Like teaching you how to dance. I think we've taken a long enough break.
He pushed off the wall and poured two shots of whiskey.
One more for courage. Salud.
His hand brushed mine as he handed me my shot, and a tiny jolt zipped down my spine. The whiskey burned smooth enough to dampen any concerns over my body's strange reactions tonight. You didn't answer my question truthfully, I said. Warmth buzzed over my skin and pooled in my veins. I held my liquor pretty well, but the drinks were strong, and I didn't resist the intoxication as fiercely as I normally did. It felt good to let my control slip, just a little bit.
I wasn't lying when I said I would choose a career I'd be good at.
A smile still played at the corners of his mouth, but his eyes contained a soft warning.
I even gave you an example.
Semantics. You don't play fair.
I never do.
He came around behind me. His hands found my hips, and my breath slowed beneath the weight of renewed static.
Let's try this again.
The music changed to something sultrier, easier to follow. Maybe it was the new rhythm. Maybe it was the alcohol. Or maybe it was my attempt to focus on anything except Javier that loosened my inhibitions. Whatever it was, it worked. I no longer hyper-focused on moving exactly the way I should, and the ironic result was that my movements flowed so much more easily. I wouldn't win competitions anytime soon, but I no longer resembled a malfunctioning robot, as someone had so rudely pointed out earlier.
Much better.
Javier's murmur grazed the nape of my neck, eliciting an involuntary shiver of pleasure.
There might be hope for you yet.
The seeds of a witty reply died on my tongue when he lowered his head so his face came next to mine. A delicious, earthy scent seeped into my senses, heightening taste, smell, and touch until my mouth watered and I could feel every beat of his heart against my back. I turned my head a fraction of an inch, just enough to meet his eyes. I wished I hadn't. Javier's gaze smoldered like a lit match in the dark, scorching every inch of skin and any semblance of distance between us. Beads of sweat dripped between my breasts. It was an inferno out here, but he was so close, and my head was so light, that if I just... My lips parted. His eyes darkened, and, "Luca!" A girlish squeal from the neighboring villa tore between us. "That's my favorite bag!" There was an indecipherable reply, followed by a riot of laughter, and then silence. But it was too late. The interruption snapped me out of whatever trance Javier's drinks slash unholy magic slash suspiciously glorious cologne put me under. I jerked away from him, the loss of body warmth as sobering as the bowl of ice water I'd thrown on him mere days ago. What was I doing? He was my client, and he'd almost. Javier stared at me, his expression unreadable. If it weren't for the heavy rise and fall of his chest, I would have thought him unmoved by what just happened, or didn't happen. My heart crashed against my rib cage, but I lifted my chin, broke eye contact, and forced myself to walk calmly into the villa without another word. He didn't stop me, and as I closed my bedroom door behind me and slumped to the floor, I hated how a tiny part of me wished he had.
Chapter 9. Javier. Fuck. 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 Triple fuck. It wasn't the most mature response, but it was the only one that accurately summed up my situation. It had been 36 hours since my movie night with Sloane. 36 hours since our dance lessons. 36 hours since I'd discovered how perfectly her curves fit beneath my palms, and how much more intoxicating her scent was compared to even the finest whiskey. It was knowledge I could have done without because now that I'd experienced it, I couldn't imagine not reliving it. Unfortunately, the chances of that were slim considering how badly I'd fucked up. If my friends hadn't interrupted us, I would have kissed her Sunday night. And I was certain, positive, that she would have let me. Otherwise, she wouldn't be avoiding me like I was the devil out to corrupt her. I glanced down the beach at where Sloane sat by herself, reading that damn communications book of hers. With my friend's help, I'd convinced her to join our boat excursion for the day. But she'd kept to herself the entire time. Snorkeling in the crystal clear waters? No. Taking advantage of the gourmet tapas and open bar? No. Saying a single word to me after we boarded the yacht? Absolutely not.
Where are you going?
Evelyn asked when I stood. Despite what Lucas said about not hooking up with her again, the two of them had been all over each other all day. I made a vague excuse and left my friends to their devices. Other than Luca, I wasn't particularly close to anyone in the group. We partied together often, but I wouldn't spill my deepest, darkest secrets to them or anything. In fact, I was starting to resent their presence because they took time away from Sloane. It's a shame to waste a beautiful day like this, I said when I came within earshot of her. We'd stopped at one of Majorca's hidden coves for lunch, and while we weren't the only ones on the beach, the early October crowd was sparse enough to give us relative privacy.
I have sun, sea, food, and a good book,
she said without looking up.
I'm not wasting anything.
I sat beside her. We have different definitions of good, I drawled. She didn't respond. When I was a kid, my friends and I used to argue over which superpower we'd rather have. I'd fluctuated between flight and invisibility, but right now, I'd sell my Ferrari for a glimpse into Sloane's thoughts. Fuck it, there was only one way to get her attention. We should talk about our kiss. Her movements stilled. Then slowly, deliberately, she slid a bookmark between the pages, closed her book, and looked up. It was 78 degrees, but goosebumps coated my skin like I'd walked into a meat freezer.
We never kissed,
She enunciated each word with terrifying precision. Technically, no, but we almost did. So let's talk about it. Sloane's knuckles whitened.
There's nothing to talk about. It was late, and we had too much to drink. Period.
So it doesn't affect our relationship in any way?
Of course not.
Then you have no reason to avoid me. Recognition of my trap flared in her eyes.
I'm not avoiding you.
I didn't say you were, I replied easily. I said you had no reason to. Sloane inhaled an audible breath. I could practically see her counting to 10 in her head.
Is there a point to this conversation?
I just wanted to clear the air about Sunday night.
Consider it cleared.
Good.
Good.
We sat in silence for a second.
Is there anything else?
Sloane asked pointedly. Sure. If you could have any superpower, what would it be? She closed her eyes and rubbed her temple.
Javier.
Indulge me. This is what people do. Talk. I gestured between us. We've worked together for years, and I don't even know your favorite food. That was a lie. I knew she loved sushi because it was neat and easy to eat on the go. I knew she preferred double cheeseburgers when she was on her period, and steak, medium rare at client dinners unless her client was vegetarian, in which case she ordered soup and salad. She liked her wine white, her coffee black, and her gin with a splash of tonic. I knew all of these things because despite her assumption that I paid attention to no one except myself, I couldn't stop noticing her if my life depended on it. Every detail, every moment, all filed and categorized in the Sloane cabinet of my mind. I would never tell her any of that, though, because if there was one thing sure to send Sloane Kensington running, it was the possibility of intimacy.
Fine,
she said, bringing me back to the present.
I'd choose time travel so I could go back and fix any mistakes I make.
But then your life wouldn't be what it is now. She glanced away.
That's not necessarily a bad thing.
The crash of waves filled the silence. From the outside, Sloane appeared to have the perfect life. She was beautiful, smart, and successful, and she counted some of the most powerful people in the world as either her friends or her clients. But I, of all people, knew appearances were deceiving, and the shiniest surfaces often hid the ugliest secrets.
If you had the chance, wouldn't you go back and change things in your past?
She asked. My hand involuntarily fisted the towel. Regret swelled and collided with memories I thought I'd locked away long ago.
Javier!
The panic in my mom's voice bled through the roar of the flames.
¿Dónde estás, mi hijo?
He's just a kid. It was an accident. If he'd been more responsible, it should have been you. The reek of smoke and charred wood filled my lungs. The beach cove closed around me, the steep cliffs forming prison walls and the glare of sun against sand whitening my vision. Then I blinked, and the nightmare receded, replaced by my friend's laughter in the background and the touch of concern on Sloane's face. I loosened my grip on the towel and forced a smile. Everyone would change something if they could. I still tasted ash on my tongue. I wanted to spit it out and drown it with beer, but I couldn't do that without raising suspicion. Do you still talk to anyone from your family? It was the only topic I could think of that would divert Sloane's attention. She was sharp enough to pick up on the shift in my mood, but I didn't want to discuss the reason with her or anyone else. Ever. As expected, her face shut down.
When I have to. Have you talked to your father recently?
Touché. She wasn't the only one who considered family relations a taboo subject. No, he's not exactly in the right state for friendly phone calls. Even before he'd fallen sick, he hadn't been a great communicator. With his business partners and friends, yes. With his only son, not so much. Sloane tilted her head, obviously trying to gauge my true feelings regarding my father's illness. Good luck, considering even I didn't know how I felt. He was the only direct family I had left, so I should have felt strongly about his potential death. Instead, I only felt numb, like I was watching an actor who looked like my father wither away on a movie screen. My father and I had never been close, partly because he blamed me for my mother's death, and partly because I blamed myself too. Every time he looked at me, he saw the person who'd taken the love of his life away, and he couldn't do a damn thing about it because I was the only piece of her he had left. Every time I looked at him, I saw disappointment, frustration, and resentment. I saw the parent who'd taken out his anger on me when I'd been too young to understand the complexities of grief, who'd given up on me and made me give up on myself before I even started.
"He'll pull through,"
Sloane said. She didn't try to comfort me often, so I didn't ruin the moment by wondering if maybe things would be simpler if he didn't. It was a terrible, ugly thought, the kind only monsters harbored, so I never uttered it out loud. But it was always there, festering beneath the surface, waiting for the right moment to strike. Sloane's phone lit up with a notification. I glimpsed a telltale email icon before she snatched her cell off the ground, and the moment collapsed around us like a sandcastle at high tide. "No work," I reminded her.
"It's not work, it's..."
Her skin took on the hue of bleached bone. I straightened, concern washing away the remnants of unwanted memories. "What's wrong?"
"Nothing."
She stood, her expression frozen.
I'll be right back."
Did she just stutter? Sloane never stuttered. She walked away, leaving me to stare after her and wonder what kind of message was possibly bad enough to throw Sloane Kensington off her game.
Chapter 10. Sloane. "Your sister is pregnant." 4 words shouldn't have the power to nauseate me, but they did. I reread the email for the 1000th time. Soon after I received it that afternoon, Javier's friends decided they'd had enough of the cove. They'd wanted to sail to another beach, but I'd convinced Javier to drop me off at the resort first. Thankfully, he'd done so without comment. Now here I was, hours later, sitting in my bed and staring at the first piece of direct correspondence I'd had from my father since the day I walked out of his office and out of my family. Of course he would break his years-long silence for Georgia. She was my full sister, but we'd never clicked the way I did with Penn. And now, she was pregnant. I'd known it would happen eventually, but I hadn't expected it so soon. The smoothie I'd forced down for dinner sloshed in my stomach as I read the rest of his message again. In true George Kensington form, and yes, my sister was named after him, the message was stiffer than a freshly starched tuxedo at the Legacy Ball. "Sloane, I'm writing to inform you that your sister is pregnant. Given the circumstances, it's time you make amends and release your childish grudge against an incident that occurred years ago. Pettiness is not an attractive trait. Regards, George Kensington III. I thought my indignation would have run out of fumes long ago, but it intensified with every reread. "It's time you make amends and give up your childish grudge." Childish grudge? Childish grudge? The phone creaked from the force of my grip. Trust my father to still pin the blame on me instead of his favorite. Part of me recognized the cliched irony of my situation. Poor little rich girl wasn't as loved as the golden child, the one who could smile and dance and charm anyone in the room. Georgia could cry like a normal human and act like the perfect socialite. She was the daughter my father had always wanted, and I was the disgrace. If I were watching a movie starring me, I would scoff at myself, but this wasn't a movie. It was my life. And as much as I pretended it didn't bother me, my broken relationship with my family would always be a sore spot. I tossed my phone on the bed and stood. If I thought too hard about Georgia's present life, I'd start thinking about the past. And if I thought about the past... No, I wasn't going there. Determination hardened my nausea into steely resolve. Fuck Georgia. Fuck the past, and fuck my father's attempts to guilt me into apologizing for things they'd done wrong. It would be a cold day in hell before I crawled back to them. I was doing just fine without them, thank you very much. Pressure built behind my eyes, but I set my jaw and ignored it as I rifled through the closet for something to wear. Most evenings, I preferred a quiet night in with a book, wine, and movies. Not tonight. Tonight, I wanted company.
Javier. After I dropped Sloane off at our villa, my friends and I stayed out on the water until sunset. We grabbed room service at Luca's place before hitting up the resort's famous nightclub. Objectively, the club had great music, great service, and great drinks. I would change a few things. The retro lighting design didn't fit with the futuristic vibes, and the layout of the VIP lounge didn't flow as well as it could have. But overall, it met my criteria for a memorable night out. So why wasn't I enjoying myself? "This is fun," Luca said. He and Evelyn had gotten into a fight earlier, so their whirlwind hookup was dead before it fully revived. "Right?" "Yep." My enthusiasm rivaled that of a prisoner on his way to death row. What was Sloane doing at the villa? Was she eviscerating some poor rom-com again? Her reviews were vicious, but I found the passion with which she wrote them oddly charming. She was so reserved all the time that it was nice to see an area in her life where she fully let herself go. Lucas said something else, but I barely heard him. What the hell was in that email she'd gotten? She'd said it wasn't a work thing. Was it her family? Her friends? Her unconfirmed mystery lover? If only she were here so... A flash of blonde caught my eye. I stilled, my gaze honing in on the newcomer turning heads. Platinum hair, ice blue eyes, legs that went on for miles. She looked exactly like Sloane. But it couldn't be her because... Holy hell. Heat crawled beneath my skin as she strode through the room, either unaware or unimpressed by the eyes following her. Rich cobalt silk poured over her frame, baring her shoulders and stopping high enough on her thigh to tease the imagination without revealing too much. Silver heels added 4 inches to her height, and her skin glowed like pearls kissed by moonlight. I grimaced. Pearls kissed by moonlight? Where the hell had that come from? I wasn't a poetic person in the least, but she looked good enough to inspire Shakespeare himself. It wasn't her clothes or her body. It was the way she moved, looser and more fluid than normal. It was the way she carried herself, confident with a hint of vulnerability. And it was the way she commanded attention without trying, like she was a fucking goddess among mortals. I'd never seen anything like it. She stopped in front of me and Luca, and my blood burned just a little hotter in her presence. Sloane Kensington entering a nightclub for fun. I hid my body's visceral reaction behind a lazy smile. Someone checked the temperature in hell. It must be freezing down there. Very original. Now that she was closer, I spotted a telltale flush on her cheeks. Was she already drunk? It was so out of character, I could only stare astonished as she took a fresh drink from Luca's hand and downed it in one smooth pull. I cast a warning glare at my friend. Now that Evelyn was out of the picture again, I didn't want him getting any more ideas about using Sloane as a rebound. She was a mutual acquaintance. Any relationship between them would be too complicated, obviously. So would any relationship between us, which was why I switched to water and made a pointed effort to stay away from Sloane for the next hour as she circulated the room. Unfortunately, the VIP lounge was a confined space. No matter what I did or who I talked to, she was always there, occupying my thoughts and drawing my attention, until whatever conversation I was holding drifted into silence. Dude, just ask her to dance. Luca hadn't left my side on the banquet, though he'd suddenly become fascinated with something on his phone in the past 20 minutes. Across the room, Sloane said something to the DJ, who nodded and smiled at her in a way I didn't appreciate. I don't know what you're talking about. I tipped my head back and closed my eyes, trying to erase her image from my mind. Were DJs allowed to flirt with clubgoers? Wasn't that a professional liability or something? Sloane! Luca's voice was barely audible over the music. You haven't looked away from her once since she showed up. Because I don't want her surprising me. She's like a predator in the wild. You have to keep an eye on her at all times. Right. I could hear the smirk in my friend's voice. So you don't mind if I dance with her then? My eyes popped open, and I lifted my head to glare at him. Actually, I do fucking mind, and not for the reason you're thinking of. That shit will get messy. Why? She's your publicist, not mine. I barely know her. She's your sister-in-law's best friend. So? So? I sputtered. So that's messy. Says the guy who hooked up with his roommate's ex. That was in boarding school, and that was different. My roommate had been an asshole. Vivian will kill you if you touch Sloane. No, she won't. And all I said was I wanted to dance with her, not sleep with her. Luca shrugged. But hey, you never know. We're on vacation. I could get lucky. I wasn't a violent person, but in that moment, I'd never wanted to punch someone more than one of my oldest friends. If you, an eruption of cheers interrupted me mid-sentence. My gaze swung toward the DJ booth where Sloane was dancing barefoot on a neighboring tabletop. Sloane, dancing, on a tabletop. Hell must be an ice playground by now. Every pair of eyes in the room was glued to her as she swayed to the music, which had transitioned from a dance mix to a sultry rendition of the latest R&B hit. Either I was the world's best dance teacher, or she wasn't merely drunk, she was wasted. On the bright side, I'd been right. Her stiffness came from overthinking, and when she wasn't so focused on making every move perfect, she danced. Well, she danced in a way that ignited every cell in my body. I rubbed a hand over my mouth, torn between watching and stepping in. Sober Sloane was going to hate this in the morning. My lips curved at the thought of her reaction, but my amusement died a quick death when one of the other clubgoers climbed onto the table, grabbed her by the waist, and started grinding against her. My reaction was so swift, so visceral, that I couldn't have explained what happened next if someone put a gun to my head. 1 second I was sitting, the next I was up and across the floor, my vision tinting with scarlet as I bulldozed through the startled crowd. Sober Sloane would have kneed the guy in the balls for touching her. Drunk Sloane had no such qualms. She turned to face the guy whose hand crept perilously close to her ass. If she moved another inch, the throng of people crowded around the table would get a perfect view up her skirt. Several already had their phones out, but they quickly dropped them when I approached. Whatever they saw in my expression made them scramble out of the way as I climbed onto the table and yanked the guy off her. I towered over him by several inches, but even if I hadn't, the fury churning in my gut would have given me an unfair advantage. He made a noise of dissatisfaction. What? You have 3 seconds to leave, I said, my voice deadly calm. 3. I didn't make it to 2 before he gulped and disappeared into the depths of the club. Fucking coward. Part of me was disappointed I didn't get the chance to slam my fist into his nose, but there were more pressing matters at hand. I faced Sloane again. She hadn't noticed her dance partner's absence or my arrival. She was too busy taking shots with one of the clubbers on the ground, and consequently giving everyone an eyeful of her cleavage. I grabbed the double shot of tequila before it reached her lips and tossed it to the side.
Hey, I was—
Her protest cut off in a yelp when I swept her off her feet and tossed her over my shoulder. I didn't trust her to walk straight in those heels after God knew how many drinks.
Let me go, you Neanderthal!
She pounded on my back as I carried her off the table and out the door. The club sat on several hundred feet of prime oceanfront real estate, and it didn't take long before the sound of the waves overpowered the music leaking into the night air. Be careful what you ask for. I dropped Sloane on a thick patch of white sand. I was tempted to dunk her in the ocean to sober her up, but even I wasn't stupid or assholish enough to do that. Yet.
You asshole!
She pushed herself to her feet with surprising grace given her inebriation.
What the hell do you think you're doing?
What the hell do you think I'm doing? I think I'm making sure you don't wake up to photos of your bare ass splashed all over the fucking internet. Her glare skewered me to the spot. As always, Sloane was glorious in her wrath. On any other night, I would have sat back and watched that cool mask of hers explode in the most spectacular way. But she wasn't the only one seething tonight.
Don't be ridiculous,
she said.
I'm not you. People don't care what I do in my free time.
That's not true. I care. The thought rose, unbidden, before I banished it. You're a Kensington, and a high-profile publicist, and the cameras are always watching. You're the one who taught me that.
I'm a Kensington in name only.
A tiny flicker of vulnerability across Sloane's face stabbed at my chest before her expression iced again.
You're always telling me to loosen up. Now that I am, you have a problem with it?
I have a problem with some random guy groping you in public, I snapped.
Why?
Because the thought of anyone else touching you fucking kills me. Because. Irrational anger blanketed my words with heat. It's not you.
Stop acting like you know me.
Her voice rose to the level of a shout.
We are not friends. We are not dating. You are simply a client, and you are the one who forced me to come here. You have no right to act like my boyfriend or handler.
I'm trying to help.
I don't need your help.
Every piece of vitriol dragged us closer until we stood inches apart, our chests heaving and our bodies shaking from the force of our convictions. Animosity blazed between us, fanned by years of pent-up frustration, and a spark of something far more dangerous. I didn't know why I cared so much, because she was right. I had no claim on her beyond work, and I was always telling her to loosen up. But not like this. Not when it came from a place of pain rather than freedom. You're right. I don't know you, I said. But I know Sloane. And Sloane would never put herself in a situation like the one you were in. Sloane would have kicked that guy's ass, and she would have pulled you out the same way I did. Part of my intervention had been selfish, but another part had stemmed from true concern. Who knew what photos and videos people grabbed before I got her down? Perhaps I was overstepping, but screw it. It was better to be safe than sorry. Sloane's professional reputation meant everything to her, and she would never forgive herself if one drunken night jeopardized what it had taken her years to build.
Well, maybe Sloane doesn't always want to be Sloane.
Her heels wobbled in the soft sand, and she let out a curse before yanking her shoes off.
Also, I hate when people talk about themselves in the third person.
My phone vibrated with an incoming call, but I ignored it. Stop deflecting. What happened this afternoon? Why did you leave? I'd bet my entire inheritance the mysterious email was directly related to her desire to drink herself into oblivion. My phone vibrated again. I ended the call without looking at it. Sloane swallowed. She was more fragile beneath the moonlight, her hair a gilded silver instead of ice blonde, her eyes shining with a wary truth that only the depths of night could lay bare. More than anything, I wanted that truth, and by extension, the trust that came with it. Let me in, Luna. She opened her mouth, but a familiar ringtone cut her off. Her eyes shuttered, and fragility hardened into cool professionalism as she turned to take the call.
This is Sloane.
Fuck. I rubbed a hand over my face, frustration chafing beneath my skin. I'd never hated the invention of the cell phone more than tonight.
Yes, we are. I see.
Her tone changed, and an ominous foreboding prickled my scalp.
Of course. I'll handle it.
Sloane hung up and faced me again. A heavy sensation dropped like a lead weight in my stomach. I knew what she was going to say before she said it, but that didn't soften the impact of her words.
It's your father,
she said, her eyes sober for the first time since she showed up at the club.
He's taken a turn for the worse. They don't know if he'll make it through the night. Chapter 11. Sloane. There was nothing like a death scare to shock someone sober. After I broke the news to Javier, we returned to the villa and started packing. We didn't say a word to each other on our walk back or the subsequent ride to the airport. It was late, but I'd successfully roused his pilot, who got us in the air hours after Eduardo's call. I also checked out early from our resort, left a brief note for Javier's friends, and tied up other loose ends while the younger Castillo retreated within himself. I glanced across the aisle at Javier. He was sleeping or pretending to sleep. But even if he were awake, it would be impossible to gauge his true thoughts regarding his father's health. That was the one topic where he completely shut down. I rubbed my temple and tried to hold down my meager breakfast. I grabbed a few hours of sleep right after we boarded, but a vicious hangover kept me from true rest. On the bright side, I had plenty of work to distract me from everything that happened yesterday, including my father's email and my argument with Javier. Now that I was sober, I was grateful he'd stopped me before I humiliated myself further at the club, but I still didn't appreciate how he'd hauled me out of there like a caveman. I didn't dwell on the small flutter I'd experienced on the beach, which had clearly been the result of too much alcohol and nothing else. As I was halfway through crafting a press strategy for if and when Alberto Castillo died, my phone went wild with incoming texts. Considering it was the crack of dawn in New York, that couldn't be good, and a quick scroll through my texts confirmed it. Vivian, just wanted to check in on you. Call me when you get a chance. Alessandra, have fun, drink some sangria for me, heart. Isa, you look so hot, and so does Javier, wink. Go, girl. My breakfast rose in my throat again when I clicked on the link Isabella sent and saw the photos splashed across the front page of Perry Wilson's blog along with a blaring red headline. Girl gone wild. Celebrity publicist gets down and dirty in Spain with client. In one photo, I was talking to Javier while he was sitting and staring up at me with an amused smile. The second photo showed him carrying me over his shoulder and out of the club. The article itself was a mishmash of speculation and outright lies. The PR queen has allegedly been hooking up with her most infamous client for weeks, which may explain why the notoriously unflappable Castillo heir went all caveman when he saw her dancing with someone else at Mallorca's most exclusive nightclub. Sources also say Castillo's friends crashed their secret romantic getaway, which led to an explosive argument between the couple and a plan to make Castillo jealous. Did the plan work? See for yourself. There were more photos interspersed within the text, including a grainy shot of us on the beach, another of me dancing with some random guy, and a close-up of Javier facing down said guy on the fucking tabletop. Rising anger burned my initial shock to ash. Perry fucking Wilson. That little toad was probably enacting revenge for the time I'd gotten him booted from Mode de Vie's Fashion Week party, which everyone knew was the party to attend for those who wanted to see, be seen, and gather society intel. I didn't care that he was the most influential gossip blogger in Manhattan. I was going to peel the skin from his sorry body and use it as a canvas for his obituary. I replied to my friends with a brief message telling them I was okay and that I'd explain later, plus another ask for Isabella to please keep feeding the fish while I was in Colombia. I was about to email Perry and chew him out when Javier woke up.
I know that look,
he said, his first words in hours colored with exhaustion.
Who pissed you off?
I handed him my phone with the article open. He scanned it with a disinterested expression. I was still too riled up to pay much attention to his unusual subduedness. That's all you have to say?
What else do you want me to say? It's Perry. This is what he does.
Javier shrugged and handed the phone back to me.
Besides, he's the least of my worries right now.
My anger collapsed like a house of cards caught in a sudden gale of wind. I was so used to butting heads with Javier that it was hard to turn off the default mode in our relationship. But now that I was no longer steaming over the blog post, I noticed the shadows in his eyes and the seemingly unconscious clench and unclench of his fists. It was a different Javier from the one pictured on Perry's blog, and it made a weird little pinch slide in between my ribs. "No news is good news," I said, my voice gentling. "You'll get a chance to talk to your father."
"Maybe."
Javier's mouth tilted up for a second before sobering again.
"We used to be close, you know, when I was younger. I was his only child, his heir. I was supposed to continue his legacy, and he spent all his free time preparing me for the task. Office visits, tutors, enrollment at the best international schools where I could network with the people I would do business with one day."
Emotions flitted across his face in a rare display of vulnerability. I kept my eyes on his, afraid to breathe yet unable to look away, and worried the smallest movement on my part would spook him into silence. Javier never talked about his relationship with his father, and the glimpse into their past both fascinated and saddened me.
"But it wasn't all business,"
he said.
"We had normal father-son days. He took me to football games, or soccer as you know it. We had family dinners and vacations abroad. It was nice. Then..."
I suppressed an involuntary flinch. I knew what happened next. Everyone did.
"My mom died,"
Javier said, his handsome face devoid of emotion.
"And everything changed."
A heavy ache slipped past my defenses and burrowed deep inside my heart. He'd been 11 when his mom died. The fire that took Patricia Castillo's life made international news given her marriage to Colombia's richest man, the sheer destruction left in the fire's wake, and a viral image of a preteen Javier being carried out by firefighters. That image anchored every article and TV segment about the fire. The authorities ruled out arson, but details about how the blaze started remained murky.
"Do you miss her?"
Javier asked quietly.
"Your mom?"
"My mom had died in a freak horseback riding accident when I was 14. My parents' marriage had been a socially expedient but loveless one, and unlike Javier's father, who never stopped grieving his wife's death, mine had remarried less than 2 years after burying his first wife. A new, different kind of ache blossomed. All the time. My admission bled between us, forming a strange, tenuous bond that sent tingles over every inch of my body. Javier's shoulders relaxed, as if my words had somehow lifted a weight off them. We were different in so many ways, but sometimes all people needed was one point of commonality, one infinitesimal thing that made them feel less alone. I swallowed past the hitch in my throat. We were the only people in the main cabin. Our private flight attendants were in the kitchen, preparing lunch, but the distant clink of plates and silverware soon faded beneath the thuds of my heartbeat. Javier and I stared at each other, both recognizing the lazy swirl of tension in the air, but neither acknowledging it. I wanted to look away. I should look away. But his gaze held mine captive, its tumultuous depths sparking with an emotion I couldn't identify. I swallowed again, and something else flared in those hot, dark eyes before they made a slow descent over my face, tracing the slope of my nose, the curve of my mouth, and the point of my chin before gliding down my neck. They settled at the base of my throat, where my pulse fluttered with wild abandon. The same pesky butterflies that had snuck into my stomach during our dance lessons broke free again. Only this time, I couldn't blame it on the alcohol. I was stone cold sober, and I... "Mr. Castillo, Miss Kensington, would you like something to drink before we serve lunch?" Our attendant's smooth voice tossed a bucket of ice water over the moment. The tension fizzled with an inaudible pop as Javier and I yanked our gazes apart.
"Water."
His smile looked forced.
"Thank you, Petra."
"Same." I cleared my throat of its hoarseness. "Thank you." We ate our lunch in silence. However, even though we didn't discuss our pasts again, a sense of connection lingered. Javier and I weren't the first or last people to miss a parent. But the way we responded to our losses, and the masks we presented to the world, perhaps we were more similar than we realized.
Chapter 12. Javier. Thanks to the time difference, we arrived in Bogota before noon. My father's driver was already waiting when we landed, and he whisked us through the city's winding roads and densely packed neighborhoods with enviable skill. I was born in Colombia, but educated abroad my entire life. I spent more time in the halls of boarding schools than I did at home, and I'd only visited my birthplace twice since my father was diagnosed with cancer last year. The first had been after the diagnosis. The second had been right before my Miami birthday trip, when he'd summoned and berated me for failing to uphold the family legacy while he was dying. If there was one person who'd used their illness to manipulate other people into doing what they wanted, it was Alberto Castillo.
Javier.
Sloane's voice sliced through my thoughts.
We're here.
I blinked. The pastel haze from the streets morphing into twin guardhouses and fully armed security personnel. Behind the black iron gates, a familiar white mansion rose 3 stories high, crowned by red tiles and latticed windows. Home, sweet home. Sarcasm threaded my words, but a sick feeling stirred in my stomach as we walked inside. Decades-old smoke clung to the walls, making me nauseous. My mother had died here. She'd burned alive right on this plot of land. And instead of moving, my father had rebuilt the house right over her death place. People said he wanted to stay close to her in his own morbid way. But I knew the truth. It was his way of punishing me and making sure I never forgot who the real villain was in this house. You don't have to stay here, I told Sloane. Her clean, crisp scent drifted over me, masking echoes of the smoke. I'll be happy to book you a suite at the Four Seasons. Sloane had visited the Bogota house before for work, but beneath the shine and luxury, heaviness shrouded the mansion's foundation. I couldn't be the only one who felt it.
Trying to kick me out already? That's record timing.
You'll be more comfortable at a hotel. We passed by a giant oil portrait of my father. He glared down at us, his face stern and disapproving. That's all I meant.
Maybe, but I'd rather be here.
Sloane stared straight ahead, her stride purposeful, but warmth flickered in my chest all the same. She was prickly, uptight, and as cuddly as a cactus. Yet somehow, she had a way of making even the worst situations more tolerable. However, the warmth hardened into ice when we entered my father's room. His staff had transformed it into a private hospital suite complete with the latest medical technology, a 24-hour rotation of nurses and attendants, all of whom signed ironclad NDAs, and the best care money could buy. But that was the thing about death. It came for everyone. Young and old, rich and poor, good and evil. It was life's greatest equalizer. And it was clear that despite Alberto Castillo's billions, he was standing at death's door. Conversation vanished when the room's occupants noticed me. My father was the second youngest of 2 sisters and 1 brother. They were all gathered here along with my cousins, the family doctor, the family lawyer, and various attendants. Eduardo was the only one who stepped toward me, but he halted when I approached my father's bedside. The carpet was so thick it muffled even the slightest noise from my footsteps. I might as well have been a ghost, gliding soundlessly to where my father lay with his eyes closed, his frail frame hooked up to a mass of tubes and monitors. In perfect health, he was a titan both in reputation and appearance. He dominated any room he walked into and was equal parts feared and revered, even by his competitors. But over the past year, he'd withered into a husk of himself. He'd lost so much weight he was almost unrecognizable, and his olive skin resembled ashen wax beneath the sheets. A rope snaked through my chest, winding tighter and tighter. He made it through the night. Dr. Cruz came up beside me, his voice pitched low so only I could hear him. That's a positive sign. I didn't take my eyes off the motionless form before me. But Dr. Cruz had been with my family since I was born. Tall and reedy, he resembled a swarthy beanstalk with silver hair and a prominent nose, but he was the best doctor in the country. However, there were some things even the best doctor couldn't hide, and I knew him well enough to pick up on the hesitation rolling off him. His situation remains critical. Of course, we'll take care of him the best we can, but I'm glad you arrived when you did. Meaning my father's passing was inevitable, and soon. The rope pulled tauter. I wanted to reach inside and tear it out. I wanted to run away from this fucking house and never come back. I wanted peace once and for all. But I didn't say any of that to Dr. Cruz when I mumbled a generic reply, or to Eduardo when he came up to embrace me, or to my aunts and uncles and cousins, half of whom were here solely for their cut of my father's fortune. The only person who didn't smother me with pity or concern was Sloane. She stood by the door, respectful of the family's privacy, but staying close enough in case anyone needed anything. When my father passed, she would be the one crafting the press statement and media strategy. Knowing her, she'd already started both. Regular families buried the dead and grieved. Families like mine had to issue press statements. Here lies Alberto Castillo, shitty father and guilt tripper extraordinaire. He was emotionally abusive and wished his only son had died. But man, he was a hell of a businessman. The absurdity of it all punched a hole in my composure, and I couldn't stop laughter from leaking out in the middle of Tia Lupe's platitudes. The more I tried, the harder my shoulders shook until my aunt stopped and stared at me in horror. Some of my cousins had drifted off to take advantage of the mansion's pool or arcade, but the remaining family observed me like I'd murdered their favorite pet.
What's so funny?
Tia Lupe demanded in Spanish.
Your father is on his deathbed, and you're laughing? That is beyond disrespectful.
It's funny you should say that, Tia, considering you only come around when you want my father to pay your bills. How's the house in Cartagena? Still under the million-peso renovation you so desperately needed? Steel flickered beneath my amusement.
You should talk. You're a spoiled little brat who wastes my brother's money without ever—
Lupe. Enough. My uncle placed a hand on her arm and firmly steered her away from me. Now's not the time. He cast an apologetic glance at me, and I summoned a wan smile in response. Unlike Tia Lupe, Tio Martin was quiet, even-tempered, and cautious. He lived in the same half-dozen outfits year-round and didn't give a crap about the lifestyle of the rich. I had no idea how he'd ended up with someone like my aunt, but I supposed opposites did attract.
No, Lupe is right,
Tio Esteban, my father's eldest sibling, said.
What's so funny, Javier? You haven't been home in months. You refuse to take over the company, so poor Eduardo here is stuck doing your job. You are constantly pictured in the gossip rags, partying and wasting God knows how much money. I told Alberto to cut you off a long time ago, but no, he refuses.
He shook his head. I don't know what he was thinking. I did. Money was another form of control for my father, and the threat of cutting me off was more powerful than the act. If he actually cut me off, that would be it. I would be free. I could have cut myself off, but I'll be honest, I was a hypocrite. I railed against Lupe for using my father as an ATM machine when I did the same. The difference was I admitted it. The money was a prison, but it was all I had. Without it, Javier Castillo, as the world knew him, would cease to exist, and the possibility of losing the only value I had was more terrifying than living the rest of my life in a gilded cage.
Oh, you know Alberto,
Tia Lupe scoffed.
Always holding on to the romantic notion that my dear nephew will someday stop being a disappointment. Honestly, Javier, if your mother were alive, she would hate—
The rest of her sentence cut off with a shriek when I grabbed her by the front of her shirt and yanked her toward me. Do not ever talk about my mother, I said, my voice deceptively soft. You may be family, but sometimes that's not enough. Do you understand? My aunt's pupils were the size of dimes, and when she spoke, her words shook.
How dare you? Let go of me this instant, or—
Do you understand? The feather in her ridiculous hat quivered with increasing intensity. It was a testament to her unlikability that no one, not even her husband, stepped forth to intervene.
Yes,
she spit out. I released her and she scrambled back to Tio Martin's side.
Excuse us.
Sloane's cool touch soothed some of the flames raging in my gut.
Javier and I need to discuss some media matters in private.
I followed her out of the room, passing my aunt's vengeful gaze, Dr. Cruz's frown, and a host of other silent judgment. I wish I cared. I was glad I didn't. Sloane led me to my father's office down the hall. She closed the door behind us and faced me, her expression not betraying an ounce of emotion.
Are you done?
She had it coming.
That wasn't my question.
Four strides brought her close.
Are you done?
She punctuated each word with precision. My jaw tensed. Yes. Was what I'd done smart? Probably not. But it had felt damn good. Of everyone in my family, Tia Lupe was the last person who should talk about how my mom would feel. The two had never gotten along. Tia Lupe had seen my mother as competition for my father's time and money, which was disturbing on so many levels, and my mother had disliked her sister-in-law's shameless self-aggrandizement.
Good. Because if you're done, it's my turn to speak.
Sloane tapped the globe on my father's desk. Red pins highlighted every country where the Castillo Group's beer had the biggest market share. Half the globe was red.
This is your inheritance,
she said.
A global empire. Thousands of employees, billions of dollars. You are the only direct heir to the Castillo Group, and even if you refuse a corporate position, your name means something. It means there will always be people looking to take you down, to take from you, to get what they feel like they deserve. Some of those people are right down the hall. Your job,
she jabbed a finger at my chest,
is to be smart. This is a critical time not only for your father's health, but for your future. If he dies, it'll be a feeding frenzy, no matter what his will says. So unless you're willing to give up your inheritance and work for once in your life, keep your hands to yourself and your temper under control.
Unlike earlier, her touch burned. Indignation shriveled beneath her steady stare. She wasn't being malicious or unsympathetic. She was being practical, and in typical Sloane fashion, she was right. Tough love, Luna, I drawled. You're good at that. I stepped away from her and toward the globe. I spun it idly, watching the Americas roll by, followed by Europe and Africa, then Asia, then Australia. I stopped it when South America came into view again and plucked the pin out of Colombia. It pricked my thumb, but I hardly felt it. Have you ever wished someone would die? I asked softly. I don't mean figuratively or in a moment of anger. I mean, have you ever lain awake at night, dreaming of how life would be better if a specific person didn't exist? It was the closest I'd ever come to shining a light on my darkest thoughts. And the somber ticks and talks that followed sounded like hammers striking at my walls. The English grandfather clock in the corner was one of my father's prized possessions. Rosewood case carved with an intricate inlay design, face crafted of chased silver, hallmarked numerals by a famous London silversmith. He'd paid over $100,000 for it at an auction, and its imposing sentry felt like an avatar for his reproach. A breeze brushed my skin as Sloane reached for the pin.
Yes.
Her fingers grazed my palm for a single lingering second before she pushed the pin back into the globe.
It doesn't make us bad people, nor is it an excuse. We can't always control our thoughts, but we can control what we do about them.
Her gaze coasted from the antique surface of the globe to my eyes.
The question, then,
she said,
is what are you going to do next?